Okay, welcome back. Time for our nightly coronavirus report and update with Dr. Henry Nyman. A couple quick headlines here. Baseball set to reopen next month for the coronavirus shortened 2020 season. So they're going to try it. There's going to be a lot of players who get sick and have to drop out. We'll see if the team continues to try to play in a league that is going to have to deal with some extraordinary problems and their chances of success. I don't know. UPS employees are testing positive. Expect more delays, this time in the Bay Area. Dr. Fauci tells us states might not need an absolute shutdown again. It's kind of he's equivocating a little bit there somehow. As Texas hits an all-time high in new cases, Governor Greg Abbott of Texas tightens outdoor gathering rules and regulations. The hospitalizations in Texas have some health leaders there quite worried. The governor of Washington, Inslee, has now ordered that everybody in the state wear masks. I drive around occasionally and I see people. It's been hot today. It was, mid-90s. And people, yes, I understand air conditioning, but they're in their cars and they're wearing masks. That I don't understand. It just, you get out of the car, you put your mask on. You get in the car, you should be relatively safe. Okay. Henry, welcome back. Another day, more headlines, more cases. Same old story.
No, actually, they're record cases, so the story's changing. I mean, we got past the weekend. The weekend, they always go down, including Monday, because Monday's really given Sunday's results. By the time you get to Tuesday, you start to get some real numbers, and the real numbers are going through the roof. I mean, I'm not sure that California's done reporting, but there's already over 34,600 cases today. So that's
one day,
34,640 and counting. Right. Wow. So that's the level we were at when they shut things down. It's shifted. As you said, it's not in the Northeast and it's not Chicago or Detroit or New Orleans, although Louisiana is going up again. But it's the southern states. California, you know, I said yesterday they got above 6,000, and today they got above yesterday. They were 6,493 yesterday. They were 6,761 today. So they're a couple hundred higher than there were yesterday. Mm-hmm. Texas has set an all-time high. They broke 5,000. They were 5,489. Arizona set a new record. They had, for cases, they had 3,593, and then they set all kind of additional records. They set records with the number admitted to the ICU, the number admitted in the hospital. There were a couple other, the number on ventilators. So, this wasn't just more testing. These were more seriously ill patients. And they set, new numbers across the board. And, other states, South Carolina had 912 cases today. Who else broke 1,000? Louisiana's going up now. They're up to 1,356 today. Georgia was 1,750. So the 34,000 was largely driven by the states in the South and the states in the West. And as I said, it's kind of a herald wave. So it doesn't hit everywhere at once. It kind of picks and chooses its places and starts to take off. And now it's alarming. The the Republican governors in Texas and Florida. I mean, they were saying, not a problem. We're going to open things up. You know, we never really had that many cases to begin with. And even though we're not going down, you know, the calendar says we got to get the economy rolling again. And we're just going to open things up. And now they're getting hit, and they're getting hit hard. And all these southern states that really didn't have that much activity, when the Northeast had all the activity and a few of the other larger cities had activity, they were on the low side, and they figured, you know, it's not a big deal. It's just these northern cities that you know, can't manage their population. But it turns out the northern cities got, you know, locked things down and got things under control, and they knocked the numbers down dramatically. And that's what Trump is pointing to. He's saying, oh, we knocked down the case fatality rate. There aren't that many dying patients. And as I said before, it's exactly as I said. The deaths in the Northeast are very low. New York only had 10 fatalities yesterday. You know, yesterday is kind of reporting Sunday, so it went back up a little bit, but it was 27 today. So, I mean, they're relatively low numbers, and from the lockdowns in the Northeast, it's leading to a low number of cases, although they are starting to creep up a little bit, but they have a low number of deaths because the deaths are trailing. So essentially, the deaths are reflecting the reduction in the number of new cases they had, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And so now they're coming up with very low numbers on the deaths. And then in the South, the deaths haven't really got rolling yet because these numbers, you know, it goes through the same sequence. The initial numbers are first people get infected, then they develop symptoms, then they think that, well, maybe they should go see the doctor, and then they, and nowadays they don't necessarily see the doctor. They call the doctor and they say, well,
no,
come here.
That's right. Right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Go to one of those drive-in sites. And apparently in Arizona, they have people waiting in line in their cars, but they're in line for 10, 12 hours, and they give up. They don't get tested. They spend a whole day in their car waiting in line.
Oh,
and then
no.
those that do get tested, it takes a week to give them the results. So,
all right, why?
So they gotta,
why?
Because they're
why?
Backed up. It's
simply an overload. Okay. All right.
Right. Right. It's simply an overload, and it's a limited number of tests, and it's kind of a rerun. It's what things were like back in April in the northern cities.
Correct.
Where they had an influx of cases. They didn't have
right.
enough test kits. Everything took forever. You couldn't get tested unless you had, you know, breathing difficulties, essentially. If you had a fever and a cough, that wasn't enough. You had to also have breathing difficulties, and they took a little while to get the result because they switched it over, and they had LabCorp and Quest doing the testing, and they just got overwhelmed, and so they took the sample. They had their normal pickup. They picked them up. They sent them to their testing labs, and they sat for a week because they had too many tests coming in, so they couldn't process them quick enough. So that's kind of another rerun, you know.
Right.
And now Trump is just totally out of control. I mean, he's going and
well, this is really a Henry. This is a Shakespearean quality tragic comic character. Now he said today, my border wall stopped the coronavirus.
Exactly. Exactly.
My God.
Yeah. I mean, he is delusional. I mean, or he thinks his fans are delusional. I mean, the U.S. is number one in the world. He says they're number one because We test a lot, but we're number one because we got because we have more cases than anybody in the world. It's not because we're over testing. The number of cases are ridiculously high. The cases came from the U.S. to Mexico, not from Mexico to the U.S. And you can even tell from the strain that, we ended up with the Italian lineage. The Italian lineage started in Italy. It came to the East Coast and then it kind of migrated throughout the countries, throughout the entire country now, including places like Phoenix. I mean, Phoenix did sequencing a month and a half ago, and all of those sequences were the Italian lineage. I mean, that's all mm-hmm. they had there. Mm-hmm. And so this spread is not new. Is the numbers are new. That it's been there long enough and it's got high enough, so now it's really taking off. And you know, it might be because it's gotten so hot that more people are inside than outside. I don't know. Or it could just be, you know, lifting the restrictions or a combination thereof. But the numbers are taking off throughout the South. They're increasing. And it's not just the number of cases. It's the number of people that are being admitted in the hospital. And it's the number of people that are being admitted to the ICUs. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just, well, we tested 10 times as many people and we have 10 times as many cases now or something. That's not right. What's happening. Some places had very low numbers. And so they started, their numbers went up because they were testing more. So some of the increases due to increased testing, but that's not causing the hospitals to get full. And I mean, the people that are going to the hospital are going to the hospital because, you know, they have symptoms. And they have symptoms because they've got the virus and it's confirmed because they actually got tested. And I don't even know how many they're confirming because one state that kind of stood out a month ago or so was Florida. Florida had a very low number of deaths and they had a very low number of cases. And today I just looked at the tables that have the excess deaths. And, you know, as I mentioned before, but it's worth repeating, these excess deaths are not dependent upon any testing. They are basically just a tally of death certificates, regardless of cause of death. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the number of deaths is usually pretty predictable and changes very gradually. It kind of goes up a little bit in the winter during flu season and then kind of goes back down. And is at the lowest point right about now or in the summer. You know, it's heading towards its lowest point. It might maybe be next month will be its lowest point, but it's going down normally. And in the latest reporting week, which was June 6th, Florida has a huge spike in deaths. And I'll wait another week and see what it looks like and see if they move them around a little bit. But they are mm-hmm. way above the limit. And, you know, they kind of look like the cities in the Northeast look at the beginning. They've shot through the limit. It's not that they're, you know, right. above the excess death line. They're way above the excess death. And that's not reflected in their numbers. They're not reporting huge numbers of deaths. Actually, now they're reporting very, very few deaths. And so they weren't reporting that many deaths back, you mm-hmm. know, 2 weeks ago. And that's what they show on the excess deaths. And there's no way you get that type of a jump at this time of the year. Because like I mm-hmm. said, the numbers are normally going down at this time of the year. They go up a little bit in the sure. winter and they seasonal. Go down in the summer. Yeah. And we're pretty close to the bottom and there's more deaths now than any.
Now, you, I got to give you, Henry, I got to give you credit. You forecast this exactly as it apparently is going to play out. There are a couple of things I need to mention here. There's an article here that it's entitled, you'll find it in headlines, everyone. It says, what they don't tell you about surviving COVID-19. Recovered doesn't mean healthy again. And I'll put the word necessarily in there. But you need to read this article. This is not a virus you want to get. It's not a good virus. It's a bad virus. You don't get over it like you do the flu, apparently, in many cases. There is permanent residual damage to any number of different organ systems. And we've talked about this. Well, I think we may have been the first people to talk about this issue, that it was obviously going in other areas of the body because of this multi-basic cleavage thing, or polybasic. And Henry brought that forward, and it's true. This article, and I don't want to scare anyone, I don't, but I want you to have the data. I want you to have the facts so you can think about this. What they don't tell you about surviving COVID-19, recovered doesn't mean healthy again. Look for the article and read it. You just don't want to get this virus, okay? Now, that said,
it's also not limited to the elderly. I mean, with
younger
problems,
people.
I mean, they have these rashes and these neurological things come up in children. You know,
correct. COVID toes. So,
right.
Remember?
And some of these are because you have a very strong immune system. You know,
all right, let me ask you to do one other thing here.
Storms kind of stuff.
Right, okay. With all of these, it's obvious it's going to do what we forecast way back when. It's going to work its way through the whole populace. It has already gone much further than the stats would even probably lead us to believe. But what are people to think? I don't want people to sit in their homes quivering and cowering. I want them to be mobile, wearing a mask, using common sense. If you got to go out, you go out. So what in general would you suggest as a one of the preeminent virologists in the world would be the prognosis for the average person of any age who gets this virus? Now, I know there are a million variables. We've talked about viral load and all that. But generally speaking, we got 35,000 cases, new cases. What are those people to think? What should they, how scared should they become? That's the big question. I don't like fear, but I do like data and facts.
Well, it's just unpredictable. I mean, the problem is most people will recover and they won't get that sick, and they won't even have to go in the hospital. But, 20% will end up in the hospital, and 5% will end up in the ICU. And if they're younger, they could very well be the category that you just described, where they'll survive and they'll get discharged, but they'll have issues. And if they're older, they may not survive. There's a good chance they won't. Depends how old older is. If they're 65, then it's kind of iffy. If they're 80,
underlying
85,
then
they've got
too.
A good chance that they aren't going to survive.
Right.
And that's what the problem is with, the governor in Florida says, well, we got a lot of cases, but the good news is that, we're getting a lot of younger people. The average age is just 37. Well, that's a good news, bad news. It's good news in the sense that most of them won't end up in the ICU, but it's bad news because they're going to be active and they're going to transmit the virus, and they're going to transmit the virus to others their age, and they're going to transmit it to their parents or their grandparents. And it'll just be, one transmission step delayed, so that you won't have that many people going in the ICU on the first wave, but 2 or 3 weeks later, you will, because they're going to infect other people, and some of which are going to be older, and they're going to end up in the hospital, and a percentage of those are going to end up in the ICU. So it's kind of delayed, but you're still going to end up with a bunch of people in the ICU and a bunch of people dying. And that's what they're seeing in Arizona right now. I mean, Arizona started on this a little bit earlier. Arizona, like I said, has everything that they submitted, you know, 6 weeks ago, which were collected a month before that. So the back in April and May, all they had was the Italian lineage in Phoenix. And now they've got their ICU beds are filling up and their ventilators are getting close to being maxed out. And they're running out of places to ship them. That what they were doing is, you know, if they ran out of beds, they would transfer them to, in some cases, another city. And now, because the numbers are going up everywhere, they can't do that. Southern California has big numbers. Arizona has it in Tucson and Phoenix. And they just don't have the beds anywhere nearby because the virus is spreading dramatically in all of those areas. And then Trump comes along with, you know, he had another 3,000. I didn't hear exactly what he said today, other than he said something about the wall kept the virus out or something. Some nonsense along those lines. But
oh, it's worse than nonsense, dear friends, as most of you know. All he did was 200-some miles of the wall had been rehabilitated. That's it. It's a 2,000-mile, right. Almost 2,000-mile border. Go ahead.
I think there was, I think the length of the new wall where there was no wall previously was either 2 or 3 miles.
It's tiny. It's not even observable. Yeah. It's that small.
Yeah. But then he went to this church that, you know, was supposed to have this ionizer. Now they took that
Dream,
down.
Dream City.
They had that up
Dream
on the website.
Dream City.
Right. Yeah. Going to Dream City. And, you know, there was some coverage and they were, you know, asking, well, are you concerned about the virus? And they said, no, we're not concerned. Yeah, if you're going to get it, you're going to get it, or it's no worse than the flu, or it's all overblown. There really aren't that many cases, and da-da-da-da-da. And virtually none were wearing masks. And in Phoenix, they have mandatory masks now. You know, they've got to that level where there are so many cases that if you're outside, you know, in a public space where you can't, you know, have social distancing, you're supposed to be wearing a mask. And the mayor actually said that, you know, we've got this new ordinance and, you know, she doesn't think that they can safely hold a big event like this with 3,000 people, but at a minimum, they should, wear a mask, and the public officials should set an example, including the president. And that fell on deaf ears. I mean, nobody was wearing a mask. The only thing they did is, well, A, of course, they got them to sign a disclaimer so that, you know, Trump in the church would be held harmless if they right. got COVID. But then, in addition, they had Trump on the podium. They had some students come up there because these were supposed to be students for Trump. Mm-hmm. And they had them stand at a podium, which were 25 feet away. Trump was all by himself. There was nobody standing by Trump. And students that came up still had to, there they had to maintain their social distancing. So Trump was the only one that was socially distanced from other people in the building. Everybody else, they were packed like sardines. They had every seat full. They had something like 3,000 people there. They had arrived many hours before he did, so they were milling around, and you know, there were I would say masks were below 5% of the total. You know, they were few and far between as far as who had masks on. And it's just a disaster because they've got a higher frequency than Tulsa. I mean, Phoenix is on fire. I mean, they are loaded with virus, and there's no way you're going to have 3,000 people come into this church and spend like 6 or 7 hours there in this enclosed space. And then they were all, you know, jumping up and screaming and sitting down and jumping up and screaming. I mean, they kept showing, you know, their applause for whatever nonsense line Trump was throwing out there. They are definitely going to be a cluster of cases coming out of that event. And they're going to go and take that virus back to, you know, I don't know how local they were. I'm not sure exactly where they were all from, but they're going to take them from that event and they're going to spread that in an area where they're already taxing the delivery systems there. They've already got the beds full. They're running out of ICU beds. They're, you know, like I say, they set a record today. There were 3,500 new cases, but there were also a record number of admissions to the hospital. There was a record number of admissions to the ICUs. There were a record number of people that went on ventilators. So they're running out of all of these, you know, services. And then they come in with 3,000 people that are going to spend 6 hours in a room. And then they're going to go out in the community and spread the virus even further. And it's like, this is the second event. Ever since the lockdown, there have only been two large events like this that had thousands of people in it. And they were both Trump rallies, and they were in 4 days. So he is just spreading the virus, and he's doing it, you know, without regard for anyone other than himself.
This is a good time. I'm going to read something here. This is a story, an editorial piece that I have up in headlines as well. And I've mentioned this before, earlier tonight, CNN. This is the most succinct and brutal Republican rejection of Donald Trump that you will ever read. Now, it's authored by Chris Saliza. I think that's how he pronounces it, CNN. But it's quoting a verbatim transcript. Did you see this? From Steve Schmidt,
no.
Who was on
Steve Schmidt,
he ran John McCain's 2008 campaign for president. Right. He was interviewed on MSNBC. Here is his analysis of Trump. Now, I'm not here just to take gratuitous shots at Trump. He's obviously an easy target, but I just want you to all hear this. And if you don't read it, you'll have heard it. Just two paragraphs. Donald Trump says, Mr. Schmidt, has been the worst president this country has ever had. And I don't say that hyperbolically. He is. But he is a consequential president as well. And he has brought this country in 3 short years to a place of weakness that is simply unimaginable. And there were a lot of us on that day when he came in, who were deeply skeptical and very worried about what a Trump presidency would be. But this is a moment of unparalleled national humiliation, of weakness. When you listen to the president, says Schmidt, these are the musings of an imbecile, an idiot. And I don't use those words to name call. I use them because they are the precise words of the English language to describe his behavior, his comportment, his actions. We've never seen a level of incompetence, a level of ineptitude so staggering on a daily basis by anybody in the history of the country who has ever been charged with substantial responsibilities. And finally, it's just astonishing that this man is president of the United States. the man, the con man from New York City. Many bankruptcies, failed businesses, a reality show that branded him as something that he never was, a successful businessman. Well, he's the president of the United States now, and the man who said he would make the country great again. And he's brought death, suffering, and economic collapse on truly an epic scale. And let's be clear, this isn't happening in every country around the world. This place, our home, our country, the United States, we are the epicenter. We are the place where you're the most likely to die from this disease. We're the ones with the most shattered economy, and we are because of the fool that sits in the Oval Office behind the resolute desk. End quote. Excerpt from Steve Schmidt's MSNBC interview. So I thought that was an appropriate place to put that out there. This is a realization that is, by the way, finding home in people who are on both sides of the aisle. This is a growing sentiment of many Republicans in the country. It's just too much. Go ahead.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He's in charge, well, theoretically in charge of the pandemic. And, you know, his solution is to A, ignore it, B, functionally dissolve his task force. He hasn't talked to them in weeks, so he's getting no scientific input. And then he says that the way to control the virus is to limit testing. He said it again today that he was not kidding. He was not joking when he said to limit testing. He really wants to limit testing. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy. I mean, Fauci was on Testify. The only reason you heard from Fauci today was because he was testifying before the House Committee with other members of the task force and giving an update. And he said, well, nobody said told us to limit testing, and we intend to increase testing. But I think somebody heard it. Yeah, and like I said, he gives these orders by just saying them publicly and expecting people to follow. He doesn't have to write it down. He doesn't have to say that he gave so-and-so instructions. He just has to say what he wants, and he'll get people to basically do things to make good on his instructions. And he's in charge of this pandemic. And the pandemic is just out of control. I mean, he's the one that said it's going to disappear in April. And then he had another advisor who I think is leaving now, some economic advisor, who said it was going to disappear in May. He said it was only going to be two more weeks of it. By mid-May, it'll be gone. And the levels are close to what they were when the lockdown started. And then on top of that, just as a contrast, the EU, who had the Italian lineage, I mean, they had the same virus that was throughout Europe, that they've got, that they'd held on to their lockdown long enough to get the virus down to a manageable level, so that then as they lifted the restrictions, the number of cases was low enough that they could go ahead and do contact tracing and get things under control. You can't do contact tracing when you have 30,000 cases per day.
Forget it.
I mean, that's way too many to keep tabs on them. And those are just the ones you know about. I mean, if you've got 35,000 positives, you probably have another 35,000 that you've never tested. So you've got, 100,000 people a day that are getting the virus. You're not going to do anything with contact tracing.
Contact tracing is over. It's done. It's not practical. Right. It's silly. No, it's too late.
And
five. How many people? Excuse me.
How bad it is.
Only 300 dead in, I believe, South Korea. 300 dead. That's all. I think it was South Korea. Had a very low mortality number, and they jumped on this.
Right.
And they right. did it right.
Yeah, and they had their first case when we had our first case, our first confirmed right. case anyway. And they went right. and they jacked up their testing, and they went, they used cell phones, et cetera, to trace people and to identify contacts and see who they subsequently had contacts with. And then they went and they made sure that these people were quarantined, and they stopped the transmission chain, and they got it under control. And the same thing is now happening in Europe. And the reason I'm bringing this up with Europe is that they had the Italian lineage. They had major outbreaks, including places like Italy. I mean, Italy obviously had this Italian lineage first. And so now they're talking about opening up the EU, and they're excluding three countries from coming to the EU. One is Brazil, one is Russia, and one, of course, is the United States. They are gonna restrict any U.S. citizen from coming to the EU because the virus is out of control here, and it's out of control in Brazil, and it's out of control in Russia. And so we are the top, among the top three. I mean, we're actually number one. But I mean, things are so bad here that nobody wants us to come to their country because we're loaded with virus. And Trump says, oh, he's going to build the wall and keep the virus out. We've got more virus than any country in the world. What are they keeping it out? I mean, people want them to build the wall to keep us in.
So
that's an example on how bad the pandemic has been managed. And now, you know, the indications are that it's only going to get worse because these Republican governors are now saying, you know, they were saying, you know, that we're not going to do any lockdowns. We're going to keep this under control. It's not going to be a problem. We've got a lot of hospitals. We've got a lot of beds. We've got a lot of resources. We can handle a lot of cases. And now they're starting to get worried because the numbers are going up. I mean, Texas has got over 5,000 new cases per day just in Texas. And
right.
they've got, you know, big medical centers. They've got, you know, they're teaching hospitals. They've got plenty of, you know, interns and residences to help with the caseload. And they're starting to get concerned because the numbers are going up too quickly. And they're doing the same thing in Florida. They're worried about Miami, and they've got senior citizens there, and their cases are starting to go up. And like I said, I don't know, they've got these excessive deaths. So I think they know that there's people dying. I don't know why they're not showing up on their numbers on COVID cases dying, but there's no way they would have that many deaths if they weren't COVID related. I mean, you don't get spikes like this where, you know, it's way above what it normally is unless there's some infectious disease. You know, that's the only thing that's going to produce that many fatalities in, I mean, these are weekly reports. So in this 1 week period, the only way you're going to have that many people dead certified by their death certificate is you have some type of infectious disease. And it isn't even some type of, you have a pandemic. You aren't going to get these types of numbers even with a flu outbreak. A flu outbreak, you can get the number of deaths so they cross the threshold and you say there are excessive deaths. It's not that you have, you know, 30-40% above what you expected as far as how many people you thought were going to die that week. And that's what this initial one looks like. Now, it just started. And so I'm kind of going to be interested to see what happens in the next couple of weeks or so, because it usually isn't. It's so high, it isn't going to be a 1 week phenomenon. And so the question is going to be, is it going to continue to go up? And if it is, they're doing something in Florida where they're not testing these people, or they're somehow coming up with this diagnosis that, oh, they must have died from a heart attack or something. But you don't have people suddenly dying of a heart attack. That's what I say. With these are very easy to see these dumps, mm-hmm. because there's nothing that causes a big increase like that. All, you know, you don't have all of a sudden 1,000 extra people had a heart attack this week. It just doesn't work that way. I mean, you can.
But don't worry, Henry. Trump is reportedly planning on sending another wave of $1,200 stimulus checks out. So all is well. Don't worry.
Yeah. It's working on the economy. But that's what he doesn't really get. If you got this many people getting infected and you got Republican governors saying that maybe we're going to have to lock things down and we're going to have to limit all of the restaurants and bars that are opening and all of the people that are heading out to the beach, and you're just not maintaining any social distancing. And apparently, in Florida, there is a lot of masks, you know, that at least for stores, you know, and restaurants, et cetera, they've got signs up that you need to wear a mask and people are complying. But they're still have, you know, I don't know, they're not complying that well. I mean, there was that one story about a birthday party where they went to a bar and there were 15 of them, and all 15 got infected. It wasn't that they had a party and half of them got infected. Yeah. 100% of them got infected. Yeah. And there were seven employees that were also infected.
That's explosively infectious. That's extraordinary. Wow.
Right. And that's what the whole issue is. The whole issue, because there's actually some additional data that said that there were excessive deaths before they were reporting these cases in high numbers. You know, back in April and May, there were some locations that had a lot of cases before they were doing any testing. So maybe it was March and April or something. And I don't remember where it was, but it might have been in the Northeast. It might have been like in the New York area. There were already excessive deaths that were going on, and they weren't testing anybody because none of them had a history of travel to China. But in any event, the bottom line is that these events are a major disaster. The numbers are going up, and it's not like, oh, the numbers went up today and this is it. There's nothing indicating that there was any peaking done today. It was just that there was a very high number today. But that's typically what happens, is that, you know, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday tend to be lower numbers because of the weekend. And several of these state offices now are not reporting on the weekends anymore. I mean, Pennsylvania just put up a notice that says they're just going to report Monday through Friday. And there's probably four or five or maybe six states now that don't do any reporting on the weekends anymore. And so these numbers do go down because of that. And, you know, it's like 4 out of the 7 days you can get a reasonable count. And the other three, there's different states that impact it, so the numbers go down. So today is in the mid-30,000s.
Okay. Key point. We're heading into another couple months. We'll be near flu season. What happens? What the hell happens if we have an aggressive flu season? What are the odds for that?
Right. Well, that's what the issue is in one of the warnings. One of the warnings isn't that you even need a second wave. If you have the wave that you got now overlaid with flu,
yep,
and you've got a lot of people going into the hospital for flu, and then it's harder to diagnose. I mean, if you've got flu-like symptoms, some are going to have. I think there's a new test coming out where it actually screens for both simultaneously. So it'll do flu and COVID. And so,
this is going to be very difficult for some people to handle.
It won't be sequential.
Say if they become simultaneously infected, this is not going to be good. Not good.
No, I know. I know that it's having both of those circulating at the same time is a very bad situation. In the spring, the initial outbreak here, it had it really didn't get going until the flu season was on a significant downturn, and so. Wasn't that much of an overlap. They even showed the peaks. When they showed the data towards the end of when the task force was actually presenting data, they went and they showed that, the first peak was, I don't remember, I think it might have even been reversed, where the first peak was influenza B. I think influenza B was early this year. You usually follow. So there was one peak, it was influenza B. And there's a second peak, it was influenza A, and then there was a third peak, and it was COVID. So, by the time COVID really got going, the flu was on a steep decline, and there really wasn't that much flu, so there wasn't that much overlap. And, the way things are going right now, the numbers are going up, and, you were talking about the baseball season. Well, my understanding is they said that they're going to start in about a month. They didn't really put the date that they're actually going to start the season. And aren't they pretty much focused on playing all the games in like Florida or Arizona? I don't remember where. But
something, I think they're going to try to use a few venues and control them.
Right.
Right.
But those are states that are getting
now
hit
booming.
Really hard now.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be cleared up in a month. That in a month it's going to be a disaster because you're going to have all of these cases that are going into the hospital and are starting to die. And then on top of having all the cases, you're going to have all the deaths. And then you're going to have these players start playing baseball, and the virus is going to start going from one team to another team. You got multiple members on the team, and they're going to realize that it's not just that people are getting the virus and
everybody will get to play, Henry.
People are going into the ICU, and some are dying, and others are having serious, consequences, and they're going to say it's just not safe to go and to do that. And
players are going to report to spring training July 1st. The regular season will begin just 3 weeks later on July the 23rd or 24th. That's the deal. Instead of 162 game season, they're going to play just 60
just
games.
Yeah, 60, right. And that's probably not going to happen. Especially if they're picking Florida is the state where they're going to play, probably Southern Florida on top of that, I would guess.
Some of the argument is the sunshine argument. 34 minutes in the sun and allegedly the virus dies. That's the latest.
Well, but people, if they're in Florida, they mostly are in air-conditioned buildings for a lot of the time because it's too hot and muggy out there.
Yep.
And so that's what the problem is. So there's not that much virus while they're playing ball, but they've got the virus when they're, in their hotels or wherever their facilities are, their training facilities.
Well, they need a drier climate.
Eating dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
And so the sports are going to be very, very difficult. The schools are going to be difficult. I mean, that was the other thing. You can't get any information from the task force because it doesn't meet. So that was one of the questions that they had at this house meeting. And they said, are we going to have school in the fall? And I said, well, some places will have school, but it kind of depends on the individual location and what the virus is like. And there isn't going to be school. I mean, they're right. So some places will have it for a limited time period, but most places are going to, you know, even if they try it, they're going to have school for maybe a month at the outside.
Right.
And then
the virus will subdue
these cases,
the schools.
And they're going to say, let's go back online. This is crazy. Mm-hmm. We're going, you know, to classes and X number of students are infected, X number of teachers are infected. The teachers aren't going to want to go in, especially the older ones, because they're going to be more vulnerable and they have more complications.
That's right.
It's just going to go on and on.
All right. So. Okay. We'll be right back with all of you tomorrow night. Thank you, Henry, as always. We're keeping everybody up to speed, no doubt. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, and thank you for being here. We will be back in 21 hours, Wednesday, already, tomorrow. See you then.